get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by life's difficulties or a traumatic experience? You are not alone. Welcome to Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving with Lisa Ferrance. Today, you'll hear from professionals and everyday people who understand the impact of life's challenges and the personal growth and newfound meaning that can come from the healing journey. Listen, pay it forward, and your life could change too. Now, here is your host, Lisa Ferrance.
Welcome. I'm Lisa Ferrance, and this is Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving. I'm so glad that you could be with us today. I have two very special guests. They are both professionals and parents, and we're going to be discussing the challenges and rewards of raising a special needs child. I know you're going to be very inspired by today's program. So let me first tell you a little something about our guests, and then we'll bring them on. Dr. Wayne Evans is a licensed psychologist and the founder of Practical Alternatives, which is a company that provides solutions-centered psychological and consultation services for all kinds of issues, including anxiety, depression, marital, relationship, and parenting issues. Dr. Evans received both his PhD in clinical psychology and his MS degree from Howard University here in Baltimore. He's a member of the American Psychological Association and the Mental Health Association. I know him well, and I can tell you that he is a very gifted motivational speaker. He's conducted numerous workshops and seminars dealing with marital conflict, parenting issues, depression, anxiety, and grief recovery. His beautiful wife, Robin Williams Evans, is originally from California, where she majored in business administration with a concentration in marketing. However, in 1998, Robin entered into seminary at Howard University, their School of Divinity, and she received her master's in divinity in 2004 and was ordained in 2010. She served as an associate minister for 12 years in Washington, D.C. She's the founder and director of what I think is a very special organization called A Pastor's Place. It's a non-for-profit organization that specializes in spiritual, emotional, and physical health and wellness for clergy and church congregations. And she's recently written a book on how to live a happy life with a special needs child. I'm sure we'll talk about that. It's going to be available on Amazon in August. Robin and Wayne are the proud parents of Wyatt, who is now 6 years old. Welcome both of you to the program.
Thanks. We're so excited to be here.
You guys are very accomplished, so that bio took a little bit of time, but I wanted people to know just how gifted and well-rounded you are. So we're going to be talking today a lot about Wyatt, your beautiful six-year-old son. I know, Robin, that you had a pretty uneventful pregnancy. Can you share with our listeners what happened during the delivery itself?
Sure. It was during the pushing process. I had been pushing for about 2 hours when Wyatt's heartbeat was lost. And so there was a frenzy activity in the room trying to stimulate him again. And so there was a snap decision to take me into the OR for an emergency C-section. And so during the time when they lost his heartbeat and when he was actually delivered, 17 minutes went by without oxygen for Wyatt. So when I came to in the recovery room, our doctor was saying that Wyatt wasn't doing very well. Of course, we were both distraught. They allowed us to go see him in the NICU because they were going to take him to another hospital for a cooling procedure to minimize further swelling in the brain. And so they allowed us to at least see him, and I had my camera, and I asked Wayne if he could snap pictures of why, because they rolled me down in the hospital bed. And Wayne was standing next to me, and so I asked Wayne to take pictures because I genuinely didn't believe that I would see my son alive again. And so he took pictures, and then they rushed him off to the other hospital, and Wayne went to be with Wyatt at this other hospital.
God, that's already an extraordinary experience and story. I don't know if people realize what it means for a newborn to be without oxygen for 17 minutes, but that's profound, isn't it, in terms of the long-term consequences?
Oh, it is. And usually, for at least adults, time of death is called at 15 minutes. So I know they tend to, the doctors, the medical professionals, work on babies a bit more because, you know, the brains are a little bit more plastic and pliable and can respond a little bit better to all that trauma. But, you know, I like to say that Wyatt's reset button got hit because, you know, all of his abilities pretty much were lost in that 17 minutes.
Mm. So, Wayne, you're a psychologist. I know Robin is a minister. I'm curious about each of your initial reactions to the crisis. Were your thoughts and feelings similar? Were they very different?
Well, I am a psychologist, but not in my personal life, Lisa. So
right.
At home, I'm husband and dad. So in the beginning, for me, it was all about managing the crisis and trying to hold myself together while we're trying to preserve Wyatt's life, because even after we got to the other hospital, it was still touch and go there for the first week of his life. And so in the beginning for me, as Robin said, of course, I too was distraught, and what was supposed to be the happiest day of my life, or one of the happiest days of my life, turned into this unending nightmare. But very quickly, I had to kind of put that to the side and focus on the parts of me that were husband and father and protector. In other words, trying to focus on what I needed to do to make sure that Wyatt had what he needed to try and be there for Robin. And I had to create space for myself later. So I think Robin and I, in terms of where our reactions are similar, yes, in terms of the depth of emotion, but then once things got started, we kind of, now that I'm thinking about it out loud, we kind of just took our positions and played them as best we could.
Mm. I'm assuming that you know a lot of other families who have special needs children. In general, do you see differences in the way men and women respond to having a special needs child?
You know, we've met special needs families along the way, and that's one of the beautiful things that we've received, one of the beautiful blessings we received on this journey is friends that we've made for life. And just evaluating the relationships that we see, I don't really see a lot of differences between how the moms and the dads respond. I mean, just the extreme compassion that they have for our children, you know, when we're kind of with each other, their hearts, you know, because they know it's an unwritten rule that we all know what everybody's gone through, regardless of the diagnosis. You know, we all know that we're extremely stressed. We all know that we are under enormous pressure. Little things that parents of typically developing children don't even think of. You know, we're navigating those issues that they deal with, plus a whole host of ones that are thrown on top of us. So, you know, just battling all of those, trying to keep our marriages together because the divorce rate is higher than our typically developing peers. And so dealing with all of that, when we get together, it's a respite, you know, where I see them and how they respond to Wyatt and how we respond to their children and how they're on one side fierce advocates, like mama bears and papa bears trying to protect their children. But then just, you know, melting hearts when it comes to our children and the situations that we each find ourselves in.
In terms of the dads, Lisa, what I see is, there are a couple things. One is that all of us can kind of touch and agree that for a long time we all kind of stayed in our angry place, probably because that feels more empowering, but of course that has a shelf life on it. And the second piece of it is that there is to a certain extent, which, you know, we're working to change, but a certain extent, a level of isolation, because after a while, people don't necessarily, well, the men don't necessarily want to talk about it, and in the beginning, the focus is on the mother and the child, and so the fathers oftentimes get overlooked and just don't say anything. Now, I was blessed that when Wyatt was born, I had a strong community of men who responded immediately. And, of course, friends of mine who even were from out of town stopped and were there within 12 hours. And so one of the stories that I'm most proud of from our days in the NICU was that a nurse said, you know, normally when something like this happens, we see the friends of the mom. But who are all of these men who are showing up? They are the friends of the father's father, his godfather, Wyatt's godfather, several of my groomsmen, and some of my boys from undergraduate. They all showed up, and they showed up, and they stayed, Lisa, until that thing got stabilized, and even in the days afterwards when, because you lose parts of yourself when trauma like this happens. And Wyatt's godfather, my friend Chris, I say oftentimes that he helped me to remember who I was and who I still wanted to be, because trauma can give you amnesia. So he stood in front of me until my face was restored, until I could remember what I looked like. So in terms of how men respond to it, there is this kind of isolation. But when I meet other special needs dad, I like to let them know, look, guys, you all are like the Navy SEALs of the dads, okay? So understand, I mean, we're in one sense, we're even tougher than the Marines, so hold tight and hold together, even though there's few of us, no one has to do this by themselves.
Wayne, I love that you talked about that, because I think you're right. I think that the sort of natural tendency is to immediately gravitate towards the mother and the child, and obviously that makes sense on a lot of levels, but this idea that the husband is sort of left behind a little bit and isolated. And I think it's equally important that you mentioned that anger is something that probably not just men, but certainly men would hold on to as a way to retain some sense of empowerment or control about what's happened. So that's a beautiful anecdote that you're sharing, that thank God you got that level of support and comfort and validation and reassurance from other men. You know, I think that is so critical. And probably does get overlooked.
Yes. I mean, I can't really say enough about the men from my family who showed up. I mean, my dad sat in the room with me, and we cried and we prayed. I can remember Chris had come from New Jersey, and I apologized to him because I said, "Man, I feel like I'm going to every 5 minutes I'm gonna break down and cry." And without missing a beat, Chris said, "Well, then we're gonna stop every 5 minutes and cry until you get where you need to get to." I mean, this was in 24 hours after Wyatt was born, and so there was not ever this kind of, well, you have to just suck it up and deal with it. It's like, if you need to weep, weep, and then when you're done weeping, we're going to keep on walking. And he still plays a very prominent place in all of our lives, that kind of the ministry of presence. When he didn't know what to say, he just stood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, you're right. That's incredibly a healing, that presence.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And Robin, I'm thinking about you, honey, and I'm thinking about your baby has just been taken from you. You're getting this message from the doctor that things look horrible, probably. What is going through your mind? How are you coping and dealing with this?
You know, it really didn't register just the severity of the situation. I'm thinking that, okay, there was a problem. You know, I was looking for God to bend the laws of that have been created here on earth and insert his will and restore order. You know, we intended to go to the hospital, have a baby, and come home with everybody else. And when that really didn't set in, that our lives were forever changed until we were discharged from the hospital. And when we were discharged from the hospital, we were told that Wyatt wouldn't achieve or hit any milestone. And that is when it hit home, like a pit in my stomach. I could not regain the life that I once knew. And so, you know, it was sobering, shocking, beyond measure when your reality is shredded.
Mm-hmm.
And having, you know, just not having the luxury of time to be able to rebuild what you've lost, you know, being able to reconnect with your spouse and, you know, so forth, it was just in an acute angst mode for 2 years because of his extreme medical needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Lynn and I became strangers. I mean, we were, you know, just, we were both angry, you know. I was very angry at God for, you know, not inserting his will. We did everything we were supposed to do. We are faithful servants and have been faithful servants. I mean, I'm in the pulpit every Sunday with the pastor.
That's
you know,
right.
And not, I know theoretically that, you know, we are not exempt the hurt, harm, and pain that the world offers, but I'm like, come on. And so I was devastated beyond measure, beyond words. And so it took 2 years at least for me, and then Wayne later on, to emerge from that dark place emotionally, just because, you know, just exhausted from just barely surviving. And, you know, I could attribute that to, like, you know, post-traumatic growth, and I've done tons of research in that area, you know, just emerging from a horrible place and then being able to do wonderful things with this experience that I would not ever give up. Despite the horrific things that we had been through, I would not, if given the opportunity, hit the reset button and have everything restored back to what I would call typical. I would not, because that means that I would have to trade in everything, friends that we've met, some sorrow that we've touched, and how close that Wayne and I come with process. We would have to give that up, and I am not willing to do that.
You know, Robin, I think that's such an extraordinary thing that you're saying, honey, that and what an inspiring thing that you're saying. Two things there. First, I think so many listeners are going to relate to the idea of we'd all like to think that we can dodge those bullets in life, you know, that if we just do enough of the right thing or pray hard enough. And I appreciate how shocking and how it is and how angry we become when we don't get to dodge those bullets. But I think the message that you just imparted, and then we'll take a quick break and come back, but it was so crucial, I just want to reiterate it, is how much obviously you guys have learned and grown and come together, not only in spite of, but because of what you have endured. And I think that's just an amazing message to give to people. So we're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with this very inspiring conversation. Please stay with us.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Overcome and transcend trauma with guidance from Lisa Ferrance, president and founder of the Institute for Advanced Psychotherapy Training and Education, and author of the book, Treating Self-Destructive Behaviors in Trauma Survivors. Now in its third printing, Lisa Ferrance's book for clinicians offers creative treatment options, assessment tools, and new ways of understanding self-destructive behavior in trauma survivors. Trauma experts say,
Lisa Ferrance's book is a rare gift to clinicians.
Sound inventive approaches to help clients discover alternative ways to self-soothe. And
far and away the best book written on this complex topic.
Order Lisa Ferrance's book online and receive a 20% discount by visiting www.lisaferrance.com. That's www.lisaferrance.com.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus,
creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson in The Sea Around Us said,
all at last return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end.
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth. Tune in Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Green Talk Network.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned into Inspired Journeys, overcoming adversity and thriving. To connect with Lisa Ferentz or her guest today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to lisa@lisaferentz.com. Now, back to Inspired Journeys.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Wayne Evans and his wife, Robin Williams Evans, about raising a special needs child. Both of you have alluded to the obvious impact that this is going to have on a marriage. Can you talk a little bit more specifically about some of the things that you guys went through in terms of your relationship?
I'd like to speak to that. I think what happened is that you go from being friends and lovers, basically, to co-workers and co-laborers, and that everything is about, your life gets reduced to survival mode, because those first 2 years with Wyatt, Lisa, we were in and out of the hospital on a regular basis, and just when we thought we had gotten to a place of stability, a new complication would come, like maybe a month after Wyatt's first birthday. We thought we had passed through some stuff, and then he had his first seizure, and so we're on our way to the hospital. I mean, and so that's what our first 2 years of parenthood were like. I very much akin it to combat in the sense that you don't know when something's going to happen next, and so it's very difficult to relax, and so you forget that other part of yourself. The other part of yourself stops being nurtured, because it's really like when your physical body is threatened. All quote-unquote non-essential systems that don't have to do with keeping the body alive, they get shut down. And so that happened over a two-year period for us. And so things, the landscape upon which we are living, just with the two of us, has radically changed.
Yeah. That makes sense. And then how were you able to, because I know that you have an amazing marriage, can you sort of walk us through that evolution? How are you able to reconnect and reclaim this relationship?
There were a couple things that happened. One was I went to this really great seminar and met this wonderful therapist who does a lot of work in trauma. And so after the seminar, I talked with her, and one of the things she said to me was, you know what, Wayne, you, at the end of the day, you really just need to be soothed. You don't really need to stay in this problem-focused mentality. And so she gave me the name to some really great therapists, and then over a period of some months, I pulled Robin into the therapy relationship, or should I say, our therapist and I invited her in, and then we really began the process of rebuilding. But I really am grateful to that person I met at that seminar. She's something else.
So what you're advocating, and I think you're right, is how critically important it is for parents who are going through something like this to not lose sight of the need for self-care and their own therapeutic support.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because I think it's because sooner or later you have to, what happens is you're mourning the life you lost. And so after a while, you just kind of on automatic pilot, but at some point you have to refill the tank, you have to move forward, because as Helen Keller says, and I'm paraphrasing her, but, you know, a lot of us miss out on life because when one door of happiness closes, we spend so much time looking at that closed door, we don't see the other doors that have been opened. And so, again, when I think about my own sojourn through this journey with Wyatt, is that there were two things I can say that happened to me. One is that I had a form of amnesia. Two, I went blind for a while because the only thing I could see was the pain and the loss. But mm-hmm. self-care kind of helped to open my eyes and restore my memory so I could say, hey, I'm still going to be, I still can be the man that I wanted to be and the father and the husband I wanted to be. The configuration is going to be different, but I can still be whole.
Good, yeah. Robin, anything you want to add, honey, to that journey through them to kind of reclaim this wonderful marriage that I know that you and Wayne share?
Yeah, the therapy work was absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of work that lots of people may shy away from wanting to do, because I know I should be. And you know, just really confronting things head on. And see, by us going through this trauma and this trauma together, sustaining it, learning then to see, okay, we hit some sort of bottom here. We have a new reality that we now need to build. So it was through this therapy that I was able to then look back on how I made decisions, how I chose to live my life, and some of the decisions that I've made, and said, you know, I didn't like the outcome of some of those, so I'm going to change those now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to become more focused on this and then living my life accordingly. And it was really through the trauma. I believe that traumatic experience was needed. Now, the trauma could take on so many different forms, and if it wasn't that, it was something else. And lots of times people aren't willing to make those hard, very difficult changes to then become their better self, unless they're forced to some degree. Mm. And so it was really that traumatic experience that was like our launching pad that allowed us to get on this path that I don't think we never would have been on. I think we would have come close, but not this, because I would have never thought to have an interest in trauma or post-traumatic growth or self-care for that matter until we interacted with this traumatic experience. We had to do a dance with it to try to figure out how to navigate through it. And then once we came on the other side, going through something was really where the gift was, not so much what was waiting on the other side.
I think what I'm hearing you say that I love is this distinction between working with it rather than fighting against it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've learned that through taking from a very wise teacher, taking a session on parts and kind of embracing your different parts that are of you, not suppressing them, you know, because they are who you are, and embracing those parts of you.
Yeah, we're for our listeners, the three of us are talking in code here because we have a wonderful connection to each other. So we all know what this is about. But it is such a great thing to distinguish between fighting against something that I think it makes sense, right? That initially there would be a reaction of wanting to fight against it. I'm just really, truly, I know you both, and I still feel so amazed and inspired by the courageous choices that you made to not fight against it, but to really in some ways embrace it and work with it. I don't know that everybody can do that, you know, so I think it's an amazingly courageous decision to continue to make. You probably have to continue to make that choice to work with it.
It does, and also, too, what's important to understand is that it takes people different lengths of time to deal with this. So I don't want folks to come away thinking that, you know, oh, in 60 days I should be able to, you know, handle this.
Right.
I mentioned before it took at least 2 years. It might take 5 years, you know, for you to process all of this.
Yeah.
To be able to figure things out. And I think self-education is very important as well. So not only therapy, but, you know, finding out, especially from the special needs perspective, finding out about your child's diagnosis, attending, you know, continuing education courses. So what if you're the only parent that's not a lawyer or the only parent that's, you know, not a clinician? You know, you go there to learn, whether it's self-care practices, whether it's learning the advocacy law, whether it's learning, you know, the process once your child gets in the school regarding the individual education plan. All that is extremely important to do. So education is absolutely key to the healing process, too.
Yeah. I imagine it helps you to reclaim some semblance of control as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you, because this is your world now and you know it so well, are there enough services available to special needs kids and their families?
It really depends. We've been told, and now that I've kind of heard from other people, it really depends on where you live, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
I know we live in Montgomery County, and it's fantastic with services. I know Wyatt was hooked up with Montgomery County Infants and Toddlers at 4 months old. We received fantastic services through the ARC Montgomery County since, you know, Wyatt was 2.5 months old, and he's still there. They offer nursing staff, you know, which I think if it's not the only one of two in the state of Maryland. So there's not a lot of options, you know, when it comes to that. So it really, really depends on the county that you live in. I know the public school system has been fantastic. We've had wonderful teams, and I say teams of caregivers because, you know, the team changes, since Wyatt's in school, you know, the team changes from summertime to the school year and then so forth, and he's got a team at daycare. So, you know, his teams continuously change, but we have been tremendously blessed by those that have had, you know, ferocious appetites to care for what Wyatt. And so we make it our mission to help them, too. And that's something else that I had to learn, and that's also part of what I put in my book, too, that you have to help the care team help your child. And especially as medically complicated as Wyatt is, you know, we have to make it as easy as possible for them to care for him through education. I've started, you know, creating just a document that I keep updating after I find out additional information that my son presents, whether it's medically or whether it's personality-wise, to help them connect with him. And they teach me. I mean, you know, we've created beautiful relationships with his previous teachers because they've been able to unlock the mystery that we call Wyatt sometimes. And so, you know, you have to help them help your child and not take attitudes of they're calling and, you know, your child is crying, can you come pick them up? You know, just helping them understand what's their range of normal. It's going to be very different from their typically developing peers. And having a long fuse when it comes to tolerance or patience, just because they're learning too. And you get a new team each year almost sometimes. So, you know, the process starts all over again the next year.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you've talked a little bit about, Wayne talked about how incredibly supportive friends and family were when this all unfolded. Are there things that people say or do that's not particularly helpful that maybe we want to educate our listeners about?
You mind if I take that one away?
Go ahead, my love. The floor is yours.
Yes, I would say presence. Well, that's helpful piece of it. I would say the unhelpful piece of it is silence. Silence. When you don't know what to say, your response is silence. Because what's happening is that when you're going through this horrific, I mean, out of all the stuff that's happened to me, just deaths in my life and just what have you, this ranks to be number one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when you're going through this, and although you know in your head theoretically that you're being supported, the physical piece of it is missing. And I felt alone in that journey. And so, you know, it's really imperative that, you know, if you don't know what to say, it's okay. You can pick up the phone, send an email, text, with some sort of regularity, not just when, you know, they're still in the hospital upon discharge. I mean, because Lynn and I were novices when it comes to this. There was no roadmap. Again, another reason why I decided to write the book, to help parents. I mean, I felt like we were getting crushed by the eight ball, you know. Mm-hmm. No roadmap to look at. We had no friends that had special needs children. We were groping in the dark, nothing. And I had to learn. We both had to learn, self-educate. And so when he would have these seizures that were just tough, you know, to see your child suffering like this. Let me back up. You know, Wyatt suffers from a lot. So he's been diagnosed with cerebral palsy, and he has seizures, as well as he has hearing aids. He is vision impaired, is in a wheelchair, eats through a G-tube. And did I miss anything, Wyatt? And he's nonverbal. So with seizures, you know, it is just tremendous to watch a child experience this. And so when you don't have someone that you could necessarily pick up the phone and nobody's checking in on you and you get sucked into this, I mean, you feel very alone. So pick up the phone and call, and it's okay if you just say, hey, I'm there, I love you, hang up the phone, and you do that once a week, you know, for the next 2 years. I mean, don't give up on them, because this is a tremendous struggle that they're trying to figure out. And so just the ministry, as Wayne said, of presence, and that presence could be virtual.
So the idea of you feeling a sense of connection and attachment to other people while you're going through this sounds like that is such a critical part of the equation.
It's a huge part of the equation, and I think part of, I guess, to answer the other part of your question in terms of what was not helpful is that, and you know this, Lisa, is that, you know, when a trauma hits family, you know, both the good, the bad, and the ugly come up.
Right.
And, you know, at least in terms of my part, is, you know, what we had to navigate through were just old family dynamics kind of trying to reassert themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, at least for my family, extended family members kind of inserting themselves uninvited into the situation and causing conflict. And I mean, me getting to a place where I find my own voice as a man and a husband and saying, you know, we're not doing this. This was yesterday's script. And if you can't get what was going on today, basically get out.
Yeah.
And don't tell me nonsense about family, this and that and the other, because you're creating problems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people want to be stiff-necked and stupid and selfish, you know, and bringing all this other S into your life. And you're like, look, I'm not going to keep on doing this because, and this is the important piece that I want to say, this is not about you. And it continues to not be about you. And so over the years, I've watched Robin and I be extraordinarily supportive to other people. And then folks just straight drop the ball. I mean, some folk really got themselves together quick. Other folk, not so much. And so that's the part that's like, okay, you're making you see the worst and then you make it worse. That's the part that very quickly you have to, at least for me, I started prioritizing things in terms of, okay, you know what? You have made yourself non-essential, so you can't be surprised when you get a demotion and a dial tone because you brought so much chaos into a situation that was already unstable and did it, and this is a horrible thing, Lisa, did it in the name of family.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying, Wayne. And I think you're so right that these kinds of experiences are going to bring out the best and the worst of who people really are.
Right.
And I think it's important what you're saying, that we give people permission to change boundaries sometimes in their family relationships. If you come to the conclusion that a family member, if their presence, if their advice is really not helpful, you know, you have the right to change those boundaries.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. All right, we're going to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation. Please stay with us.
Steps to a Healthier You. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Overcome and transcend trauma with guidance from Lisa Ferrance, president and founder of the Institute for Advanced Psychotherapy Training and Education, and author of the book, Treating Self-Destructive Behaviors in Trauma Survivors. Now in its third printing, Lisa Ferrance's book for clinicians offers creative treatment options,
assessment tools, and new ways of understanding self-destructive behavior in trauma survivors. Trauma experts say,
Lisa Ferrance's book is a rare gift to clinicians.
Sound inventive approaches to help clients discover alternative ways to self-soothe. And
far and away the best book written on this complex topic.
Order Lisa Ferrance's book online and receive a 20% discount by visiting www.lisaferrance.com. That's www.lisaferrance.com.
Get ahead in business and life. Read Getting It Done, 1,000 of the Best-Kept Secrets for Success in Business and Life by John Capozzi. Learn how John, a successful Connecticut businessman, obtained 13 corporate promotions in 13 years. This book makes a fantastic gift for anyone who wants to get ahead in business. Voice America will donate a portion of every copy sold to the USO. Visit GettingItDone.com and enter promo code VA1234 at checkout to get a 10% discount. That's GettingItDone.com. Promo code VA1234 for a 10% discount today.
You're tuned into Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving. To connect with Lisa Ferrance or her guest today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to lisa@lisaferrance.com. Now, back to Inspired Journeys.
Welcome back. We're talking about the challenges, and we're going to be talking about the rewards as well of raising a special needs child. I know that Robin and Wayne have already been weaving that into our conversation because that's who they are. I want to talk a little bit about the YouTube video that you guys did, which I thought was so beautiful. And in that video, one of the things that struck me was when you talked about the fact that the doctors really focused right from the beginning on all of the things that Wyatt couldn't do and was not going to be able to do. And in the YouTube video, you talk about how you began to focus on what he could do. I was so struck by that. And I guess what I wanted to ask you was, how were you able to hold such a positive and a wise reframe about your child?
God.
Okay.
God, in a very real sense. I mean, said simply, Lisa, God. I mean, I remember that conversation like it was yesterday. Robert and I are driving to the hospital. We're getting ready to be, they're getting ready to send Wyatt home. And my wife and I are scared to death. And so I'm driving the car, and Robin asked me, you know, what do you think? And, of course, I'm in my husband mode. And so I didn't want to talk about how scared to death I was, but I don't know. So I set myself and said, I think these people work for us and we work for God. According to medical science and conventional thinking, Wyatt should be gone and he's here. So we're going to start with that, because obviously a hand greater than all of ours interceded at a critical moment, and God is going to continue to do that. So I got very much out of our own power as human beings and tapped into Hashem, or the maker of all things, and said, Lord, if you don't do it, it's not going to get done. But I believe you're going to do it because you've already been doing it.
Wow. So you were able, I mean, so quickly, Wayne, you were able to go to a spiritual place about this.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's because I couldn't stay focused on Wayne, because Wayne was overwhelmed and freaked out and it kind of checked out. But I was like, look, I mean, all the other feelings I had later between God and I, at this point, I'm like, look, I literally, that first week of Wyatt's life, I watched you save his life. And I know, as much as I love him, you love him more. I don't have the power to change this, because if I did, quite frankly, we would not be here. But for whatever reason, despite calamity and tragedy, you are still sovereign. And so, yes, I'm going to lean on you, because when other people spoke death, there were people that we knew personally, friends of the family who were in the medical community, who pronounced death over my son's life. But it was my friend Chris and another one of my buddies, Jason, who quoted the same scripture within 2 days of each other. Lisa, Chris and I prayed, and then when he opened the prayer, you know, he said, Wyatt shall not die but live and declare the works of men before God. That's from the book of Psalms. Mm-hmm. And so then he said, now let's go see my godson. And then the next day I said to my friend Jason, I said, man, I don't know. He said, yes, Wayne, I know he's going to make it. Wyatt shall not die but live and declare the works of men before God. So after that, Lisa, I didn't really need a third time. I said, okay. There you go.
You were sold.
I believe you because it was, and they had not talked to each other. And I said, okay,
wow.
Y'all knelt in the same, all up in David's hymn book. You know how much I love David, teacher.
Yes.
So absolutely.
Yes.
It was like, I guess it was like a caress with an old friend I had never met. I was like, thank you.
Yeah. Hard not to take that sign seriously.
Right. I said, right. I said, that's from the Giant Slayer's book. I was like, hey, man, good odds.
Yeah, no, I get that. Robin, were you able to come to that spiritual place as quickly?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, it ebbs and flows through the process because you get frustrated and then you back away. But no, definitely all we had was God. I mean, in that situation, you really feel your, being human and unable to control anything. And looking to the medical professionals who, you know, God is moving their hands as well. I mean, we even had to, like, throw our hands up in the air even when it came to medical procedure. Wyatt was, you know, his eyes weren't looking really good in the first 2 days of life, and they wanted to hook him up to this heart and lung bypass machine. And I'm still recovering in one hospital from the C-section, and Wayne is in the other hospital with Wyatt, and we had to give an okay to hook him up because there was risks involved in it. And actually, with the child in Wyatt's situation, there was 40% chance of death.
Yeah.
We decided to do the procedure, and then, you know, if we don't, you're just kind of stuck there going, if I don't do it and he dies, or if I do it, you know, you're kind of beating yourself up either way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we opted to go ahead with the procedure, and then they did further tests to discover that Wyatt's brainstem had swelled too much, and it was certain death if they were to hook him up to this machine. So Wyatt was going to have to work it out on his own.
Mm-hmm.
What he got. And so, you know, even in that situation, when we were trying to do a medical procedure to help save his life, we couldn't. We had to lean on God in that situation. Mm-hmm. We had no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, definitely, faith kicked in big time for both of us in that situation. Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing the countless leaps of faith that you are continually being asked to take. It's, you know, it's remarkable that you just kept rising to the occasion. You know, for me, again, it's really, really inspiring to hear how you were able to navigate this. You've already talked a little bit about it, but maybe I want to highlight it because I think it's an important part of the message I always like to give with this program.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the blessings and the rewards that you've been received or that you've reaped from raising a child like Wyatt?
For me, one of the blessings was I learned what's really important in life.
Mm-hmm.
And how to find the joy in the simple things. For the longest time, I think my mind and my heart and my imagination were captivated by what Wyatt had lost. But when people meet Wyatt, one of the things I love the most about my son, and there's so many different things, but everybody talks about how wonderful and infectious his laugh is.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm thinking about that. It's probably a gift from his mother, because when a friend of mine first met, actually my best man at our wedding, when he talked about the first time he met Robin, he talked about her wonderful laugh. Well, Wyatt seems to have inherited from his mother.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, very much whenever I see Wyatt, most of the time, you know, little man is having a really good time. Like, sometimes I look at him, I'm like, dude, you've got a really good life. Like, you know, you're freer in that chair than some people I know, that wheelchair than some people I know walking on 2 feet. Wow.
Wow.
I mean, really, you know, he has lots of friends. He's popular in school, you know, got a girl in class thinking that he's cute. I'm like, wow, good times. You know, so really, I'm like, okay. And that allows a lot of the grouchiness that grown-up life can create. You know, he kind of expels it organically. Was like, really, yeah, let me kind of put things in perspective, because tomorrow is promised to no person. And so he really helps me to connect with the joys of life and really helped me to get my priorities straight.
Yeah, I get that. That makes sense. How about for you, Robin? What are some of the blessings and rewards that you get?
I would say I need to kind of rewind back to the beginning a little bit, because I was so caught up in the beginning with taking him to all his doctor's appointments and trying to fix him, trying to regain the abilities, help him regain the abilities that he lost. And so when we would hit one little half of a goal of something, because, you know, we can't put him on the same milestone chart as typically developing children, you know, I would celebrate it, but then I am looking so far past it now that I found myself not being able to enjoy my child in the here and the now, because I was looking too far into the future, trying to heal him, basically. And so it wasn't until, I say, that magic number that keeps coming back is when he was two. And I finally came to the conclusion that I needed to be happy with my child the way he is, even if he doesn't progress any further than where he is, you know, at that point at two. And so, you know, getting rid of the whole college goals or college wishes and, you know, running around and riding his bike because we got gifts from people, you know, there were bikes, and letting go of that because, you know, likelihood of them riding a regular bike was not high. And so once I let those go and genuinely loved my child for where he was at that exact moment and not who he could potentially become, that's when the happiness rushed, not even rushed, rushed in. And where I just can, you know, just with his laugh and his sense of humor is fantastic. And even though he's a nonverbal kid, you know, his receptive skills are pretty good, you know, and he's able to understand, and through training, you know, that he's received from his caregiving team at school and at daycare about, you know, hitting switches to communicate, and, you know, we have a good life with him. Yeah. And he, I wouldn't trade my child in the world. I'll take him broken and all, because he is such a tremendous blessing to so many people. And yet, and it's amazing how popular he is with his peers, and he doesn't even talk.
They love him. They love him. Yeah.
He's lovable. I've met him. He has an absolutely gorgeous smile, and he is an incredibly lovable child. And he has extraordinary parents, I have to say. I just want to reiterate, because there's, you guys have so much wisdom, and I just want our listening audience to really hear what you're saying here, which is your ability to now appreciate the simple joys, the sense of perspective that your child has given you, sort of letting go of not sweating the small stuff anymore. I love your statement about really learning how to be in the moment with him, Robin, and that beautiful message about acceptance. You know, that I have to tell you, I don't think Wyatt is broken at all. I think he's really whole, and I think that he has you were meant to be his parents, and he was meant to be your son, and God knew what he or she was doing. Right. And you know, he's a very, very blessed child to have you in his life. So I want to thank you both for sharing your story. It's a very personal, intimate story, and I'm so grateful to both of you for your willingness to come on air and talk about it, and to inspire others, as I know you have today, with what your journey has been. I want to remind people that Robin's book will be coming out soon on Amazon. We think the working title is Living a Happy Life with a Special Needs Child by Robin Williams Evans. So please look for that on Amazon. I know there's going to be tons of valuable and inspiring information in that book as well. Thank you both. Thank you to my listening audience. I'm always so grateful when you join us every week. I know you have what it takes to take care of yourself. Please join me next week, where we'll be talking about the impact that divorce has on children. Until then, be well.
Thank you for listening to Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving. Please join Lisa Ferrance again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
May the next week be a positive, life-changing one for you.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.